Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
What's the 411? You're tuned in to 411 Teen, a weekly program for teens, parents, educators, and other interested folks. 411 Teen provides a forum to examine and discuss various issues and events that confront, intersect, and sometimes interrupt our daily lives. I'm Dr. Liz Holyfield. Each year, nearly 20 million children attend summer camp where they gain independence, build friendships, and explore new interests. But how can parents choose the best camp for their child? On this edition of 411 Teen, Shana Rosenzweig, CEO of Campfire and a leader in youth development and outdoor education, joins the program to help parents and caregivers navigate the camp selection process. We'll discuss everything from cost and logistics to maturity and special needs accommodations, ensuring every child can benefit from the magic of camp. Joining me via Zoom, I welcome Shana Rosenzweig. Hi, how are you?
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yes, well, thank you for coming and sharing your expertise. What is it about summer camp that makes it such a valuable experience for children?
Yeah, so summer camp is a magical space and time, right? For young people, it's an opportunity to explore, right? Try new activities and interests. It can be a time to come into contact with new perspectives, and it also gives it a great opportunity to build new skills. And so, you know, the magic of summer and summer camp is really that it's such an expansive space. And again, that really means that camp is for everyone. It's just about finding the right camp. And I say that with a little bit of an asterisk, right? There's no okay. one right option,
right.
But knowing the options that are on the table to best suit the needs of the young people in your life.
Well, and so you mentioned the skills. How does camp support the personal growth and social skills and independence that it's so well known for?
Yeah. So it does it in a few ways. It really connects to the mission of Campfire. One is, you know, you're connecting young people in many camps to the outdoors, right? And that's mm-hmm. giving young people an opportunity to benefit from, you know, not only the physical, but also the mental health benefits of being in the outdoors and engaging with nature. Oftentimes, right, that can involve mm-hmm. physical activity as well. And sometimes it's also just the opportunity to just be, right, to relax, take a deep breath of fresh air and enjoy enjoy that time and have some thinking time, right, some reflection time, which can help young people, right, develop their processing skills. Another way is, you know, through connection to others, right? Camp is by nature a very social space. And so young people are learning to interact with their peers, right? And it may be peers of different grade levels or different abilities, maybe that have different lived experiences or go to different schools. And so socially, camp can be a really wonderful space to be growing in social skills and in your empathy skills, right? And in your ability to engage, you know, in civil discourse mm-hmm. and dialogue with others. One of the things I love most about camp in particular is also the near peer relationships that come from camp, right? Oftentimes in the traditional school year, right? It's young people and it's adults, and they don't have a chance to be working with you know, young people or adolescents that are slightly older than themselves and developing those near peer relationships, whether it's with their counselors or counselors in training that are present at their programs or day camp aides. And so that can also be a really valuable relationship that young people are growing. And then the third way is connection to themselves, right? Camp is a space to explore and discover either your current interests or become familiar with new interests, new hobbies, right? To really build your sense of identity aligned with, right, the activities and the community that you're a part of in your summer camp spaces.
Shauna, when you think about it, how would you say the camp landscape has changed in the recent years?
Yeah, so I think there's really been a shift in that, again, kind of camp is for everyone, everyone, right? You know, there's certainly, you know, kind of what I think of as legacy camps, right? Camps that have been around for, you know, hundreds of years, right?
Right.
There's kind of a generational commitment, right? Where, you know, almost like, you know, a fraternity or sorority, right? A legacy aspect to it. And I think, you know, in some ways, I have a colleague who always says, like, you know, camp is the great democracy of youth development programs, right? That, you know, I think about for my own children, they can, you know, spend 1 week at camp, at a campfire camp. The next week they can go to a local community center. And the next week they're at the Humane Society learning about taking care of animals. And
so cool.
You know, camp really is not only for everyone in terms of young people, but it also really broadens, I think, like there are so many different types of organizations, right? From secular to religious, you know, to, you know, hyper-focused on, you know, a specific topic or a sport or arts and crafts to, you know, kind of a general, you know, day camp setting that there's really camps for everyone too, in terms of a wide range of needs and interests and abilities. And that's really, I think, a fantastic evolution of the camping world.
Will you share the difference between the traditional and the specialty camps? I think you touched on some of that just briefly earlier.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So oftentimes I'll kind of break down the different types of camps that there are. So, well, you know, one is, you know, again, I think what people think of is like, you know, the traditional camp that you might see in like, you know, the movie The Parent Trap, right? Or associated with, you know, kind of very traditional notions of camp. And that is either referred to as an overnight camp or a resident camp. And this is a camp space where young people are really experiencing a variety of programs, right? And typically they are spaces where young people are spending the night, right? And so they are staying in overnight accommodations. Those could be cabins, they could be tents, right? They vary widely, and that's definitely something, you know, as a parent or caregiver to explore and determine kind of what the young person or young people in your life are comfortable with. But I think of overnight camps as really kind of wide variety of programming. And they can both be either, you know, co-ed or single gender. And again, this is where your young person is living there, right? It's kind of fully immersed in the experience, you know, 24/7. And they can range from, you know, for some of our youngest campers, typically around age 7, you know, it could be a 2 to 3 day and night experience. You know, they often commonly can span 1 week. And in other cases, they can be multi-week. So that's what an overnight camp setting looks like. On the other side of that is day camps, right? And those are similar to overnight camps, except they tend to start with somewhat younger camps, right? Often we'll see, you know, 4 and 5 year olds. And at the end of the day, young people return home. So again, wide variety of activities, but young people are not sleeping there. They're really there for kind of the core day hours. So this can also be a really helpful option if parents or caregivers are looking for childcare opportunities during the day as well.
How can parents assess their child's readiness for overnight camp?
Yeah. So I'd say the first thing is to have a conversation with your child, right? Oftentimes as parents or caregivers, you know, we tend to want to make that decision for the young people in our lives, but it can be a really important conversation to have with your young person, right? And so, you know, I think some of the things to consider is, you know, has your young person spent the night away from home, right? And are they comfortable with that? You know, what is the length of time that they might be comfortable with? Another piece is thinking about, and this really goes for both young person and for parents, is what level of communication do they need and what does the camp allow? So, you know, some camps will only allow for for mail, right? So young people are writing physical letters, you know, that are showing up via the postal service. In other cases, they may allow phone calls or emails, or do they have a parent visitation day? So really exploring kind of what are the pieces that a young person is comfortable with. And then I think asking yourself as the parent or the caregiver, those same questions is really important to figure out readiness as well.
So what I hear you saying, though, is that the child should play a key role in choosing the camp.
Absolutely.
Not the absolute role, but I mean, they should have some say in the selection of the camp. And I would think in addition to that, personality and interest and maturity also would influence the right fit for the camp.
Absolutely. You know, and even thinking about landscape, right? The landscape of the camp, like, is it, you know, near water? Does it, you know, is it more of a mountainous terrain? You know, is that an environment that, you know, what is the actual physical distance from where we reside? Like, how will my child react in those settings? I think size is also another important consideration, both size of the camp, but then also thinking about, you know, if they're spending the night, what's the size of the bunk or kind of their core group that they're with? You know, what's the mix of ages, genders, et cetera? You know, how rustic of an environment, to really get a sense of comfort level. And, you know, oftentimes for parents, it's hard to know, like, you know, I might often, you know, even for my own kids, be like, I don't know what their comfort level is. They've never been, right? Or they've never tried it. And so one of the things I encourage families to do is so many camps now offer family weekends, and those take place, you know, during the school year. And it's an opportunity as a family to go out and experience that overnight camp, either for a day or even have the opportunity to spend the night in a cabin together as a family. And not only can it be a really meaningful and memorable experience for all members of the family, but can be a really good way to assess comfort and excitement in that camp environment. So both for the young person to gain some familiarity with it and see if they feel like it's a fit for them, but also for the caregivers as well to gain more of an understanding of, if this is a camp I send my young person to, now I, you know what the space looks like or what types of activities they might be doing or where they might be sleeping. So really encourage folks to explore family weekend opportunities with overnight camps.
Okay. And then I also would think what would be important, and we're going to take a brief break, but I'm going to throw this in there, is looking at the staff, the qualified staff, and if it's ACA accredited. Hold your thoughts for a minute. You're tuned in to 411 Teen. We're going to take a brief break, but we'll get right back at you. Just tuning in, the program is 411 Teen, and this edition is featuring camp selection. I had to take a break, Shauna, but I wanted to ask you, would you identify ACA-accredited camps? How does one do that, or how do they identify the qualified staff of the camp? Would you give us some advice on that?
Yes. Yes, so I absolutely encourage folks to check if a camp is accredited by the American Camp Association. And important to note that ACA, or the American Camp Association, accredits both overnight camps and day camps. And they have a unique accreditation process for each type of camp. So certainly don't think it's just for overnight camps. If you go to their website, which is acacamps.org, there is a button right at the top that says Find a Camp. And that is a great way to search for ACA accredited camps. And again, that really will ensure that the camp is following really a robust set of safety standards, of, you know, of measures, that there's evidence that, you know, ensure that the programming is high quality at that camp as well. You know, again, practices that will support the safety and well-being of young people in those camp spaces. So certainly would always look for that ACA accredited seal. Oftentimes camps will include that in their on their websites or in their brochures as well, or even sometimes in their physical setting. So that is something to keep an eye out for. You know, other pieces that I would look for in terms of ensuring staff preparation and safety is also, you know, what is the training process for their staff, right? And so, you know, there's certainly you want to make sure that things like first aid and CPR are provided, right? And they're hiring lifeguards if there's water activities, right? But also that it's an organization that has robust child safety and youth protection standards, right? So ensuring that there are proactive trainings in place to prevent, you know, physical sexual abuse that unfortunately can happen in any program setting where young people are present, whether it be peer-to-peer or adult to youth, really important to, you know, it can feel uncomfortable to ask those questions, but reaching out to a camp director, they will be prepared to answer those questions. And if you find they are not prepared, that's a sign that that is probably a program that is not taking safety measures as seriously as it should. Other pieces to consider is it also, is it a camp that on their registration forms is asking for either medical needs, behavioral needs, you know, allergy information. Those are all important things that, again, you want, whether it's a day camp or an overnight camp, to be taking into consideration. So to give a real world example within our campfire camps, right? There's a registration form that's completed online, right, by a parent or caregiver. But oftentimes from there, we will have camp staff members that follow up and have an exploratory conversation with the caregivers, right? And to, again, make sure that nothing was missed on the form. And then again, even as young people arrive at our camp programs, an opportunity to check in with them as well. So, and that can even be things like, you know, if you're feeling nervous or worried, what helps you feel calm in that moment? So really getting an understanding from both youth and caregiver perspective to support their safety and well-being while in our programs.
What about cost? Do camps afford scholarships or financial aid? What is the status of that? Because camps can be, they can be expensive.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So camps can get very expensive very quickly. And that, again, goes for both day camps and overnight camps, right? As a parent myself, I am consistently taken aback every summer at the financial implication of sending kids to camp, right? And again, I'm someone who's dedicated their career to supporting young people to have access to these spaces. The good news on this front is, you know, certainly, again, as there's been a real commitment to ensure that camp is for everyone, is also the opportunity to remove cost barriers to participation. So some camps will list sliding scale costs on their websites. And so that's a great way to explore, again, a reduced cost option, you know, an at cost. And also if you have the financial means, oftentimes they offer an above actual cost option to help alleviate the financial burden that that other families may be experiencing to participate. So a number of ways, really kind of regardless of where you fall on the financial spectrum, of still able to participate and support other members of the community to participate as well. So that would be one thing I'd look for, is if they have sliding scale costs listed. So that will immediately give you answers. Oftentimes, either on their websites or in their registration forms, they'll indicate if they offer scholarships. Sometimes they're called camperships, right? But essentially subsidies to help reduce the full cost to participate. Another thing to explore and ask is, you know, there's the cost to attend, right? The registration cost. And there's also costs associated oftentimes with the materials or equipment or supplies that a young person needs to bring in. So that's another piece that I always encourage folks to ask about if it's not immediately made clear, right? So oftentimes we see at our camps gear libraries. So if a young person, you know, doesn't come with a sleeping bag or, you know, the, you know, the right shoes that they need for programs, right? Or in some case, like for sports camps, if you can't afford the sports equipment, always ask, because there's opportunities to really close those gaps as well that exist between registration and then the actual cost in terms of having all the supplies to have a meaningful camp experience that way as well. So, and certainly there is not one size fits all when right. it comes to cost. And, you know, one camp may be very expensive, and then you may check out another camp and it will vary drastically in price. So really make sure you're looking at all the options and exploring all the areas of interest.
And I think, you know, you as we talk about cost or the price, one question would be, is it all-inclusive, or are there even extra charges after the child gets there, you know, to participate or to do this or to do that? If you want to do this extra thing, then there's a charge for that. So parents would need to know all of those little idiosyncrasies that may apply, you know, to different camps.
Absolutely. Right. Some of them, you know, will say, okay, we ask everyone to wear a certain color shirt one day of the week. That may mean you need to go buy that shirt.
Right.
Other camps will provide camp t-shirts for you. That's included in the cost. So yeah, really, I would always err on the side of asking more questions when it comes to determining associated costs. Transportation can be another cost as well, right?
That was you were anticipating my next question, because I was going to ask you about transportation. Is it offered? Where, I mean, if it's a day camp, where do they pick the kids up? All those kinds of things, if you want to address them.
Yeah, so some camps do provide transportation, some don't. So again, that's something to both explore as you're looking at camp options, and you know, determine, is that something you're going to need, right? And similarly, in addition to transportation, I'd also double and triple check the hours of a camp, right? Oftentimes, the day camp might at first appear to be a full day, or label itself as a full day, but a full day can in some places mean, you know, 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. and in other places can mean 9 a.m. to 2 p.m.
Exactly.
And as a working parent, right, that's important to consider as well. So, yeah.
And extended care. That's another option.
And extended care, right?
Before camp and after camp. Do they offer that? Well, no. And what activities? What activities are available in this extended care?
Exactly, right. And so typically in extended care, right, we find that tends to be a bit more of a flexible time space for young people, again, which can be really meaningful, right? Sometimes, you know, it's, I think the knee-jerk reaction is to want your kids in structured activities, but really a lot of the magic of summer does tend to happen in the spaces where young people are able to have the creativity and the freedom to, you know, explore different activities and follow their interests. And so, you know, I wouldn't shy away from, you know, some of those extended care opportunities, especially, you know, if it helps alleviate a childcare burden that is on the family as well, and can be really beneficial for young people.
And another thing I think about as we talk is, especially for the day camps, is what about food? What about lunches? What about snacks? Does the camp provide them, or do the parents need to provide them? And what if your child has an allergy? How is that addressed?
Yes. So always ask, you know, and I think always be aware of, you know, always check the allergy policy, even if your child doesn't have a food allergy, to be aware of what that is, especially if you're providing snacks or food, right? You want to make sure that the food you're providing your young person is compliant with the rules and regulations for that camp, so that they can, you know, again, really remain committed to keeping all young people safe while in their programs.
Well, here in Florida, swimming is big. And I would like to ask you to address swimming. I mean, if the camp offers swimming, are there swimming lessons there? Are there licensed lifeguards? All of those things. Is it kind of just recreational swimming, or is it structured swimming? Are all those things parents should ask?
Yes, because they're all possible, and they're all present in the camp settings, right? So in some cases, camps may take field trips to a local beach, right, or a local waterfront or a lake. And young people, right, may have the opportunity to, you know, play in the water, wade in the water. So it's always important to ask, you know, not just if there will be lifeguards present, but also helpful to know, you know, who employs the lifeguards? Does the camp provide their own lifeguards? Or, you know, in some cases, if it's a field trip, are they relying on, you know, lifeguards provided by the city, et cetera? Not necessarily that one is better or worse than the other, but can be helpful information to know. Certainly, again, worth asking if there are swimming lessons provided, and also judging, you know, your child's comfort level and familiarity with water. Again, for some young people, having the opportunity to be in the water and gaining comfort and confidence in that space can be really, really empowering. And for others, it can, you know, be a space that is actually very triggering, right? And so, again, I think that's a conversation to have with the young person in your life beforehand as well, to get a sense of, you know, do they feel comfortable and confident in, you know, whatever the changing settings may be, right? To navigate that. Also worth asking a camp, right? Is privacy provided? You know, what are the ratios in which, you know, their staff supervision, you know, what do trips to the bathroom or, you know, to changing spaces look like? You know, what is provided in terms of safety procedures and protocols that way as well. So
any suggestions?
It can be a very fun part, but it also can be a very scary part as well. Just one piece I would reiterate, because oftentimes we don't think about this as parents when we're tempted by a very cute swimsuit for our child. Also important, search on the internet will help build your understanding of this, but the color of your child's swimsuit does matter and can be very helpful in preventing potential risk of drowning. And so if you know your child will be swimming in a swimming pool versus in a lake, you might opt for a different color swimsuit will make them more visible to the lifeguards and to the camp counselors. So that's a good piece
to
look at.
That's a good point. A very good point. What about the structure of the day? And what I'm thinking about is, are the children always under the supervision? Is there a counselor around all day? Or do they have some freedom to go from one activity to another?
Yeah, this is a piece that I think makes camp a really unique and special opportunity, is that young people have more voice and choice in the program, right? And especially, I think, in, you know, kind of day camps that offer a variety of programs, same with overnight camps, you know, maybe a little bit less so in some of the specialty camps, as those often tend to be a lot more focused on a specific topic or skill or interest area. But yeah, it's, you know, worth exploring certainly. And oftentimes camps will include a sample schedule of their day in their registration materials or on their website. So that's a really helpful resource to see if they make available to the public. If they don't, you certainly can ask, and they very likely have samples that are on file from years past that they can very easily send to you. But that'll give you a really good sense of, you know, again, like, what are the staff ratios? Are they with the same group of young people throughout the day, or are they with a different group of young people depending on the activity? And again, that's something to assess your child's kind of comfort level and readiness for as well.
And what about the comfort level of the parents? Because some of these questions, the parents may be a little uncomfortable knowing they want the answer, but maybe a little uncomfortable imposing the question. Do you have any suggestions there?
Yes. So even if it feels uncomfortable, ask. I always recommend asking. And again, choose the mode of communication that you feel most comfortable with. You know, maybe you don't feel comfortable asking these questions via a phone call, but you do feel comfortable sending them via an email. So, or maybe having an in-person conversation would feel most comfortable. And so in that case, it's certainly appropriate to request a meeting with, you know, a camp director or a staff member from an organization that's running a camp your child might attend. So, you know, I encourage caregivers to push back any immediate feelings of discomfort or embarrassment. As a camp professional, we've likely already been asked the question. So even if it's a question you may not have asked before, we've likely been asked it by another parent or another caregiver. and can provide an answer. And, you know, again, if you feel the answer you're receiving is not adequate, you know, trust your gut on these mm-hmm. things. And again, there are plenty of camps out there. So really, again, give yourself some time and some space to, you know, keep shopping so that you can ensure that you are feeling comfortable and confident with the camp that you're entrusting with your young person.
When a camp says that they are approved ACA, what does that actually mean? Now, I know we kind of talked about that. We addressed it. But what are some of the standards, I guess, specifically, that ACA evaluates and looks at?
Yeah. So one is they will actually look at the physical safety of the property, okay. right? So what is the condition of the facilities where the camp will be taking place, right? Are mm-hmm. the facilities safe? Are they well maintained? Are they appropriate for the programming that's taking place? They'll look at health and wellness, right? Are there healthcare plans in place? Mm-hmm. You know, food safety, hygiene protocols, et cetera. They'll look at safety and risk management. So again, what are the emergency procedures in place? You know, what are the safety mechanisms that are in place for the facility itself? And staff qualifications, right? Ensuring that they're running background checks, et cetera, on the staff. You know, the American Camp Association will also look at program quality. And this is a really important piece, right? So I encourage folks not to think of this as a nice to have, but really a necessary aspect, right? That the activities that young people are engaging in are both meaningful and engaging to young people. And the staff are adequately supervised and trained. So that can be really important.
May I ask you to hold your thoughts? It's one of those times where we need to take a break. You're tuned in to 411 Teen, and we are looking at camp selection. We're going to take a brief break, but we will get right back at you.
Views and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and contributors, and not necessarily those of WFSU Public Media.
You're tuned in to 411 Team, and I'm talking with Shauna Rosensweet. Shauna, we were talking about ACA camp requirements and program quality. Was there anything else that you wanted to add? I had to interrupt you.
No problem. The last thing I'd add again is if the program does have aquatics, right? So if there's water, mm-hmm. Water activities, swimming, the American Camp Association will make sure that those activities are both appropriate and safe for young people.
Earlier, you mentioned the location being important. How significant is location? I mean, do parents need to select a camp that is nearby, or how do you feel about the kids going out of state to camp? I mean, what are the guidelines there?
Yeah. So again, this really comes back to comfort level and readiness of your child. So, you know, one of the things I encourage parents and caregivers to think about and answer even prior to introducing a potential camp to their young person is whether it's logistically feasible, right? A parent or caregiver may need to be, you know, in the office or at work, you know, mm-hmm. In front of a computer, whatever their work setting may be, by a certain time, and just the transportation time, right, to mm-hmm. travel to and from that camp's location simply could not align, right, with the logistical requirements of the adult's job. So I think that's one piece to look at is just, yeah, what does it do for your day-to-day logistics? I think camps can be a wonderful place for young people to experience new settings, right? And sometimes that means going a little further outside your community. Other times there's ways to do that within your community. I know for my own kids, I like to think about a variety of different programmatic spaces and settings for them throughout the summer. So, you know, they may spend some weeks where they're in a camp where they're outside all day. And I also recognize, you know, especially for one of my kids, heat can be very overwhelming. So, mm-hmm. you know, week after mm-hmm. week of outdoor camp is, you know, physically exhausting for my young person. And so really creating some different options, right? So some weeks it's, you know, inside at a theater camp, right? Where mm-hmm. they will be outside less, but in a different setting. So yeah, I think all important considerations, and certainly don't feel you have to go far from home to experience some different settings. And, you know, to your point about out-of-state camps, yeah, many young people do go to camp outside yeah. of the state they live in. And I think there's a few different ways to think about that. In some cases, their families travel too, and maybe it's time for, you know, the parents are on their own little vacation mm-hmm. and they stay in state while their child's at camp. In other cases, right, a child is ready and independent and maybe interested in traveling on their own to that camp, right? If they're ready to, for example, fly on their own. And again, that is a safety measure. I would coordinate with the camp to ensure that they clearly communicate what the pickup and drop off procedures and protocols are to ensure your young person is safe in the travel time up to and after they arrive at the program. You know, and lastly, I will say, you know, certainly out of state or out of city options are also available for day camps, right? Mm-hmm. Day camps don't require you to live in a specific location often. And so if your family does spend extended amounts of time away from the place you call home during the school year, I'd encourage you to look at day camp opportunities there mm-hmm. as well. And that can be a really nice way for young people to get to know the community that you're visiting.
What about, we haven't talked about this, visitation policies? I mean, how much contact can parents have with their kids when they are in camp? I mean, can they call them? Can kids take cell phones? Can they take iPads? What are the visitation policies, and how significant is that in camp selection?
Yeah. So this is something to consider because this will vary greatly. This is something to consider both in terms of child comfort level and parent comfort level, because anecdotally, one of the things we found is oftentimes the parents struggle more with mm-hmm. lack of like cell phone access than the young people do, right? So the young people tend to be excited and relieved, especially our older campers, right, to have a break from their phones and the pressure of social media, right, and really immerse themselves off of their screens and in person. And for parents, that can be very hard when you're used to, you know, knowing, you know, within seconds where your young person is, right? And so ask that question, you know, and again, determine both parent comfort level and child comfort level with that, because in some cases, it could just be letters back and forth, and it could take, you know, the entire time they are at camp for that letter to land in your, right. in your physical mailbox. And in other cases, you know, there may be emails. Oftentimes camps will post pictures. And so there will be a password protected website where parents can go to see pictures of their child. Again, that's another place to look for some safety measures in place. You would want to make sure that that is password protected or is only provided to participating families, right? So again, also think about what your comfort level is with your child being included in things like photos at camp that might be shared with families.
Are there, well, let me ask this. What are the essentials to pack for a day camp versus an overnight camp?
Yeah. So again, a day camp are going to be, you know, things you knowing you're going home at night. All right. So a day camp, you mm-hmm. know, certainly you want to make sure you have, you know, a water bottle or something that can hold water in, right? Staying hydrated, especially during the summer, is crucial. Oftentimes having a hat of some sort is also very important. Again, to be able to provide some break from the sunshine or the heat. Again, checking with the camp to make sure whether they're providing snacks and lunch or if that is something uh-huh. You are to provide as well. Camps tend to be very good at providing packing lists, and that includes day camps. So in your kind of pre-arrival information, you may not get it right away, but it probably within a week prior to camp starting, you should absolutely be keeping an eye out for an email that will include a packing list of what to bring with as well. Sunscreen, again, is very important to ensure that young people have on them and present. And oftentimes, making sure that your young person is comfortable and confident in applying sunscreen themselves. Oftentimes, camp safety policies and procedures will prohibit staff from applying sunscreen to a young person. So that is a great thing to practice at home. I know for my kids, they find like a spray-on sunscreen a lot easier than a lotion. So that is the type of sunscreen that we tend to send with our kids. So yeah, just kind of having some opportunity, or the stick sunscreens can be very easy for young people as well. They operate more like a glue stick. So yeah, those are all things to kind of try out ahead of time with your young person to ensure that, you know, they know how to use, work their water bottle, right? That it's something they can unlock if it has a locking top. Do they know how to reapply their sunscreen? All are things that'll help you as a caregiver feel more confident sending your young person off to camp.
Are there general items that camps may ban or discourage the camper from bringing?
Yeah, this will vary. You know, some will have a no toy policy. Others will encourage, you know, a young person to bring, you know, especially if it's an overnight camp, right? An item or object that, you know, brings them, you know, comfort or feelings of security. Certainly, you know, weapons are not allowed. You know, that's definitely something to make sure. Some will ban cell phones, you know, or laptops, you know, iPads, you know. Others will have, you know, policies or procedures where they will hold on to them for young people as well. Typically, you want to ensure your child is going to a program where they will have medical professionals that are the ones who keep your child's medication, right? That typically you don't want that to be something that your child is having access to themselves or in charge of administering. And you really want that to be under the supervision of a healthcare professional. So generally, I think if it's, you know, if it's not allowed at school, it's probably not allowed at camp. That's usually a good place to start. But again, that packing list can be a really helpful place to look for also what is a no-go in terms of bringing with you to camp.
What about, and we haven't talked about this, and I'd like to see if we can talk about this last section, children with special needs. What should parents know about camps that serve children with special needs? I mean,
So I think the most important thing to know is that whether your child has, you know, a physical, a medical, a mental disability, you know, if your child is neurodivergent, none of that is a roadblock for a camp experience, right? And, you know, each year, you know, and I'm especially proud of the field that there are millions of, you know, special needs children that are able to benefit from camp. And so, you know, again, we see different structures of camp environments. And again, this is something to determine what works best for your child's unique and individual needs. In some case, it may be a camp that specializes in serving young people with that. So oftentimes we'll see camps that are focused on, you know, even within Campfire, we'll have gluten-free camp weeks or grief camps, right? Camps to support a young person who has experienced the recent loss of a loved one. In other, you know, in other situations, camps are able to integrate campers with special needs into their broader camp population and programming. And so again, it's, you know, it's important to proactively communicate with the camp as a parent or caregiver, just as much as it is for the camp to communicate with you, so that, you know, again, whether it is, you know, a temporary, my child broke their ankle, can they still participate, you know, or something that is a more permanent need, to really be open and honest with the camp to explore fit. But again, I think the most important piece is to know that you know, your child's, you know, abilities or disabilities or unique lived experiences, you know, one are probably not as unique as they may feel in the moment and certainly are not a roadblock for their camp experience.
And, you know, parents should feel comfortable in asking questions to ensure inclusion or to ensure safety, our appropriate safe staffing, all that we have talked about. I know I emphasize that because I've had several parents express some reluctance or some discomfort in asking those types of questions. So that's why I keep going back to that, that parents just have to, they have to bite the bullet.
Absolutely.
If they want to know, they got to bite the bullet and ask.
Absolutely. And I think it's important for parents to not see their questions as a burden, but see it as an interview, right? You're interviewing that camp to ensure that it is, you know, going to be a positive experience for your young person. And so their answers to those questions are as important, if not more important, to the question that you're asking them.
Do you have suggestions as to how parents can prepare their children emotionally and logistically for camp? You know, they're excited. Yes, they want to go. There's no doubt this is where I want to go. But that's easier said than done.
Yeah. Summer can, yeah, absolutely. You know, summer can be quite an unnerving time for young people, right? You're, you know, oftentimes they're very used to a specific routine and schedule during the school year, and that all gets upended, right? The second school lets out and summer begins. And so, you know, one thing that can be really helpful is even, you know, creating a physical, whether it's schedule or chart or map of the summer. You know, here's what you're going to be doing each week of the summer, you know, to the best of your ability as you have it figured out, so that young people can not only have a sense of, you know, where they'll be going this week, but also what's ahead of them, right? To kind of ground themselves in some sort of schedule for, you know, not only the summer months as a whole, but then within each week as well, right? Maybe they're participating in a camp that's only 4 days a week, and on Friday they'll be home, or on Friday they'll be having a play date with a friend or going to, you know, a grandparent's house or having a babysitter come. Any of those things are important for a young person to know, to kind of orient themselves to the experience. You know, again, as a young person's preparing to go to a specific, you know, camp, in that free packet that you receive as a parent, that can be really helpful to actually sit down with your young person and spend some time going through that, right? Help them understand, you know, what they're going to be bringing with them every day in terms of the packing list. You know, if there's a sample schedule, maybe talking through the different activities, just also creating some space to answer their questions. And it's okay if you don't have all the answers, but to get a sense of what questions your young person is asking about their camp experience will help you kind of proactively assess where there might be some stressors or worries that are on the mind of your young person. So that can be a really helpful approach as well.
What are the warning signs that a camp may not be a good fit?
Yeah, so one I think would be lack of communication. If you are not hearing from them ahead of time, that's, you know, a yellow flag, I'd say, right? It's not necessarily a sign that it's, you know, going to be a dangerous situation for your young person, but I certainly would be mindful of the level of communication that you're getting. And again, as you're nearing the start date of that camp program, if you have not heard, reach out to them. Maybe that email got sent to your junk mail by accident and, you know, it simply was a miss. So that would be one thing that I would keep an eye out for. You know, engaging in open and ongoing dialogue with your young person, especially if it's a day camp, right? And they're coming home at the end of the day, ask them how their day was, right? If, you know, what brought them joy throughout the day? Was there anything that worried them or that scared them or concerned them? That'll help you get a sense of what's happening at the camp as well. And if there's, again, any concerns that you should flag. And again, even once the camp is underway, don't hesitate to reach out with questions, concerns. You know, hey, my young person shared that this happened today. I want this to be on your radar. Can I get more information? that can be a really good way to be building that ongoing relationship between caregiver and camp, to have an understanding of what is happening within the camp environment.
Okay. Do you have a 30-minute or 30-second word of wisdom to parents as we close?
Yeah. Camp is an amazing opportunity. It is a gift that you are giving your young person. And so keep thinking of it as a gift that you're providing them. And, you know, we've talked over and over about the importance of asking questions. Mm-hmm. So again, see those questions as an invitation to give your child a gift and not as something to be concerned or embarrassed about.
Well, Shauna, I want to extend sincere appreciation for your time and your expertise, because it's time out on 411 Teen. To my listening audience, much appreciation for your time and ear. I invite you to tune in next week, same time, same place, to get the 411 on 411 Teen. 411 Teen was produced by Dr. Liz Hollyfield. Technical assistance was provided by Evan Rossi. If you would like to participate in the 411 Teen or have suggestions for discussion topics, call 850-645-7200. You can listen to previous episodes of 411 Teen at wfsu.org.